Thanks again, everybody. Hope you're enjoying your lunch. Once again, I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club, and it's an honor to have all of you here on this toasty Chicago summer day. Certainly don't need the coat check today, but it is summer in Chicago, so happy you joined us. I mentioned the sponsors, and we appreciate all of the sponsorship. We also appreciate bringing together the best and the brightest in this city and in this state on such a regular basis here at City Club. So it's always important to mention a few folks who are in the room, so you know who you're sitting next to, you know who you're talking with, and you know when you're having those conversations, you can get something done that makes the city a little bit better. So I'm going to mention a few folks here. We're honored to have Treasurer Melissa Conyers-Irvin here. Treasurer Irvin. And although I didn't see him, I think her husband, Alderman Jason Irvin, is here as well. Oh, there he is. Welcome back, Alderman. Alderman William Hall. Will Hall is here as well. I just saw him taking a call. Always working, but he is with us. I believe Alderman Byron Cicho Lopez is here also. Yes, thank you. Representative Edgar Gonzalez is here. Rep over here. Thank you for being here. Cook County Commissioner Donna Miller. Welcome back. Inspector General Deb Witzberg is here with us. Deb. RTA Chair Kirk Dillard, another former speaker here. Is Ike here? Ike Mizikowski from... Oh, hey, Ike. I didn't see you either. Welcome back. Ike Mizikowski from Hope Academy. They're celebrating their 20th anniversary on the West Side. Thank you for being here and for all the good you're doing at your school. The head of the BGA, David Greising, is here. Another partner of City Club. Nicole Benolkin from 360 Chicago, creating some of the some incredible sites in hospitality for our great city. Jim Franzik, the one and only. Where's Jim? Jim Franzik. I'm still waiting for Jim to come up here and share some thoughts. One of these days, Jim, right? Maybe. Maybe not. This is my fault. I'm not certain with the new board. I believe there are some board members, CPS Board of Education members here. Could you please stand up and give us a wave? And apologies for not knowing who exactly was in the room. This is new to us as well at City Club. So you're very welcome, and we look forward to engaging more with you as this new board comes into place. Jason Lee is here from Mayor Brandon Johnson's office. Thank you, Jason, for all you're doing. It really is a great, incredible, and diverse group. Business leaders, government leaders. Carmen Rossi is here. Business and hospitality, you name it, we've got them. We've got the right folks here in this room. This is where you get things done. So, I'm sorry. Commissioners, Kara Stamps and Stanley Moore, thank you to the both of you, and thank you for pointing that out. Someone may not have submitted their lists in time. We always try to recognize the right folks, and thank you for pointing that out. We're honored to have all of you here and have all of you back soon. Okay, with that out of the way, I think this woman needs very little introduction. She's been incredibly busy, especially this past year, and you've seen the fruits of her labor. And as I saw in a recent communication to her, the teachers in her union, she said, "Sit back and enjoy for maybe a week or two. It's summertime. You all deserved it." There's been a lot going on, especially with the negotiations in the past few months, in the past year. And a lot of this is due to who you're going to hear from in just a minute, a great civic leader here in Chicago, and a long time now, I think almost 50, it'll be 15 years, right, at the CTU, as the head of the CTU. Please welcome our guest of honor who's going to make some remarks here, Stacey Davis Gates.
Hello. What a room. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Is it cold enough?
Yes.
And they say there's no such thing as climate change. So I have been invited to come again. So I make no apologies for coming again. Good afternoon and happy summertime, Shy.
Yes.
No, for real, what an honor it is to be in Summertime, Shy, if you are not a black teenager from the South or the West Side. I just thought I'd get it out the way. But before I start, I am going to say hello to Sally Scott. Sally, wave at the people. Sally Scott is an unsung hero in the story of how we get this contract negotiation landed from the other side. Sally had the unenviable task of negotiating the first contract in a generation where the Chicago Teachers Union had their full bargaining rights. Shout out to Sally for doing what Jim Franzen couldn't. No, seriously, Jim Franzen wrote the law that tied our hands for a generation so he didn't have to negotiate the way that Sally did. But no, seriously, thank you both, Jim, for playing a very critical role as the sage of the table, and Sally for taking the baton and giving us something different. Thank you. Thank you both. I also want to shout out this table of pastors in this room. Can you all, like, wave at the people, please? Yeah. Reverend Sanders, Pastor Turner have been partners in introducing our union to the faith community in a way in which gives us a one-to-one, not a TV to one, but a one to one. So we appreciate the fact that we've been invited in to have those discussions. I also want to shout out all of the young people who are here with us today. They're Chicago public school students who are spending their summer participating in an environmental justice freedom school, a freedom school that is taking them from the water metropolitan water reclamation. How do you say it? That. To Outgill Gardens. In an attempt to understand what does climate change look like, how is Chicago addressing that, what are our responsibilities in that, and how do you see the environment through the lens of inequity and injustice. So I appreciate you spending your summer at the Chicago Teachers Union learning how to change the world, and thank you for being here with me today. Thank you. And I'm looking at people I looked at for like a year. These are people who actually negotiated the contract. Can you all please stand up? Those of you who negotiated this contract. These individuals comprise the educators, rank and file members of the Chicago Teachers Union. Cheryl Johnson is here from the People for Community Recovery. Cheryl. Asha Ransberry is here, organizer extraordinaire. We got a lot of people here. And, you know, I have like a whole bunch of stuff I want to say. And I'm only going to get to say a bit of it because I'm just really heavy in the moment of the world right now. So in order for me to get through this, I think it's going to be important for me to, like, really and truly be who I am. I'm a high school history teacher. And I am at my most calm and comfortable levels when I can be in front of a classroom engaging with people. It's important to me in that way. So this is going to be somewhat of a hybrid between a classroom and maybe, you know, an organizing section where I call you to action. So bear with me because this is pretty lengthy. And so I want people to understand that as a teacher, we try to create objectives. And these are objectives that we send to you at the beginning of the class so you are prepared to leave with something as an outcome. Today, it is important for us to engage in a civics lesson of Chicago, a civics lesson of the beauty and complexity of this country, and how history, if told the right way, propels us forward. And so as a high school history teacher, I'm going to take a lot of room with the history of our country to create a moment that I think all of us can see ourselves in, because it's important that we do that. And I want to call us to action in the solidarity that this union, the one I get to serve, again, did you all know I got reelected? And not only did I get reelected, almost by 10 percentage points more. That's something. Especially with teachers. Do you know any teachers? You know any teachers? So our objectives are to engage, to understand our role and responsibility as leaders in this moment, and to share that understanding in a way that helps us resist, reimagine, and reconstruct. You got it? Okay. So thank you for having me again. I jest, but this is a very important room of people to engage with. It is a very important room of people to engage with because it's multi-generational. It's multiracial. This room comprises people who live in every corner of this city. And in fact, today, if no other day this year, it can truly be called the City Club of Chicago. I see people who live on the west side, the north side, the south side, the southeast side, the southwest side. I see young people here. I see our sage elders here and all of us in between. That's a pretty big deal for a room for anything. So this room is Chicago. And unfortunately, it is likely that some of you have come here because you want to see the caricature, the IPI, and for those of you who don't know them by shorthand, the right-wing MAGA section of the political spectrum, the Illinois Policy Institute. See, they've spent millions of dollars crafting an image of me, my union, our movement, on social media, in the pages of the Tribune, editorial or otherwise, that probably have some people thinking that they're going to get a parody of a black woman rolling her neck, smacking her lips, or cutting her eyes, and an epic clapback for what the news was last week. I'm sorry. I'm not here for that today. Really, I'm not. I'm not going to cede our valuable time with each other to score 100 points in an intramural basketball scrimmage against amateurs. Instead, I'm going to give a lecture. which is what teachers should never do, by the way, and or what organizers always give is a call to action. President Trump is in full stride. He is. Project 2025 is becoming a part of our lived reality day by day. From forced birth to the dismantling of the Smithsonian to what appears to be an unconstitutional and unsanctioned war with Iran. We are coming to find that leadership is very important in all of these moments. And if you lead in the way that I lead, you have zero time for anything but organizing our neighbors, protecting our democracy, and resisting the chaos. Keep that word, chaos, through every tool in our collective boxes. We have to stay focused and clear-minded about our community. So hold on to that, and now imagine for a moment that you lead the largest school district in Illinois, and that the state of Illinois owes you about $1.2 billion. Billion. Imagine for a moment that you lead a school district that is being sued for finally prioritizing the needs of Black students. Think about that. And now hold on to this too. You're now being investigated. Imagine this. You're running this district and you're also being investigated for making sure that queer and trans children have a safe person, a safe space, and restroom access. Imagine for a moment that the Department of Education is threatening your funds if you do not bend the knee. Now imagine for a moment that you get to stand in front of this room, this well-heeled room, only days after the largest protest of resistance this country has ever seen. And on this stage, with this microphone, you don't assure the parents of immigrant children that you will support and protect their kids from bullies and boogeymen, or the Department of Homeland Security. And you take the time to take a stance against a CPS parent and a history teacher. I'm not going to go back and forth. Today calls for more. It calls for more because there are bombs dropping right now. And whatever you feel about the bombs and the reasons why, there are people absorbing the impact. And we can all feel each other's humanity. We also have orphans in this city right now that are without their parents because they were kidnapped by our government. Feels hopeless, feels heavy, feels like a lot to hold. So now you feel like an organizer. So now you feel like a classroom teacher or a paraprofessional or a clinician or any number of my members. Because you have to hold the disinvestment. You have to hold what has passed you by. You have to hold the hopes, the fears. You have to hold those things. And then you also have to do something extraordinary. You have to imagine with those young people the hopefulness of what a public education can provide. So you have to seek that hope. And as a history teacher, you don't have to go far. This country, our country, and the history that is told and all of its beautiful complexity gives you so much hope. And the hope that I'm choosing in this moment is the Reconstruction era. And if you're a good history teacher, you know we've had two of those. We've had one right after the Civil War, and then we have had another one during the Civil Rights Movement, a time in which our country had to go through a massive reconstruction. And what I submit to you today is that the city of Chicago is in such a reconstruction currently. Find the parallels. Our city is in the middle of leading the country's third reconstruction. The first part, the first reconstruction was right after the Civil War, and the second one was to break the back of Jim Crow. So what does it mean to say that Chicago is leading the country's third reconstruction? It means that we are carrying forward the unfinished work of Black Americans to force the United States of America to live up to its unfulfilled promise. You know what the promise is: liberty, democracy, abundance, home ownership, 2.5 kids, opportunity, a happy, healthy spouse. Ha ha. No one's married. Only me. Okay, got it. No, but seriously, equity. The promise of America is community, it's well-being, it's the legacy of giving my children more than what I had. Those promises. So that understand that before, underscore before, we became hostages to the chaos of the MAGA movement, there was a Make America America Again, a poem by Langston Hughes. Again, I told you we were in school. American literature. A poem by Langston Hughes, one of the world's greatest thinkers, artists, and thought leaders, who in fact is a direct beneficiary of the impacts of the first Reconstruction through the public school system. In one stanza, Langston Hughes writes, listen to this, "Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be the great, strong land of love, where never kings connive, nor tyrants scheme, that any man be crushed by one above." The first Reconstruction came after the Civil War, a war that was fought over the economics of enslavement, not the humanity of the enslaved. It was a war that became winnable because of the insane, like, ridiculous amount of courage, vision, and conviction of enslaved Africans who organized perhaps one of the most consequential general strikes that our world has ever witnessed. Have you ever heard the story of emancipation through the lens of labor? You've always heard it through the lens of the Emancipation Proclamation. But let me give you the story. Black Americans left the plantations in an organized action to break the back of the Confederacy so that they might be free and reunite these United States of America. That's the true story of emancipation. And in that true story, you understand that it is the people who get to act and the government that gets to respond. Our ancestors broke the back of the Confederacy by refusing to work. These patriots, appropriating the word in the right way, these patriots left plantations and inserted themselves into the Union Army to free themselves and reaffirm the very foundation of our country. And thus, there were now millions of formerly enslaved Africans asserting our own aspirations and demands and freedom dreams in a post-Civil War reality. This was the point of the first Reconstruction of America. It was quite literally the creation of the common good, and it was bold. Think about it. Think about it right now. Enslaved Africans, people who have been demeaned, dehumanized, marginalized to a product, a thing that is insured and traded, now having a freedom dream, a demand, a vision, an aspiration that is quite literally revolutionary. in consideration of the time period. And this bold idea was brutally dismantled in about 12 years by the same forces we have to recognize in this moment today. Reconstruction was challenged by white supremacy, a premise that calls for the end of DEI initiatives. Reconstruction was hamstrung by elected leaders' political cowardice, a paralysis of leadership because it might have meant a tougher primary election or an expensive general election. Who's heard that before? Reconstruction was also weighted down by unequal economic and political systems, one that fed off of poverty, a system that, like maybe today, that enables billionaires like Jeff Bezos to skip out on paying his fair share while sending pop princess Katy Perry to the moon for 10 minutes. How many special education teachers come with a trip to the moon? Sometimes you have to go backwards to go forward. But this idea of having a freedom dream as a newly enfranchised human being is quite frankly a big deal. And so our ancestors, and I say our because they're American. And so this story belongs to you just like it belongs to my people. So our. Our ancestors, newly freed people, demanded, amongst many things, a public education and health care, the basis for much of the public good we all continue to rely on today. It was the initiative of the formerly enslaved that spurred the appropriation of resources to create one-room schoolhouses and teacher training schools for Black women, for white women, and for Black men, the first of its kind DEI programming. Black Americans have always been inconveniently insisting on funding the common good from people who have always been resistant to paying for it, despite the fact that it benefits everyone. If you go back to the newspaper articles and the first-person documents of that time, you will hear the same question, how do we pay for it? Public schools benefit everyone, and especially the people who live in this wonderful city. Hold on to that the public good is a good that was literally created by people who had aspirations and dreams for themselves, but their aspirations and dreams was connected to a community where everyone can get something from it. Is that why they say a rising tide lifts all boats? If you're still an avid consumer of the press, like y'all don't do TikTok, it was more about your habits on social media than the press. But if you're still an avid consumer of the press, you'll read that the debate in CPS is whether or not district leaders and the mayor take out a loan to make the district's structural deficit more manageable. But you hear it like it's a math problem, right? Think about it. It's $529 million. It's $1.2 billion. But it's never about what budgets are about. Budgets are about choice. Shout out to the choice movement in the room. But the budget and its choices manifest into real impact that our young people get to experience. So choices about the budget left students at Julian High School in 2025 without a math teacher for nearly a year. It left Clemente High School without a chemistry teacher, but with an industrious high school senior who taught the class. Those are choices, you all. Those are not occurrences. Those are choices. And that is because the state legislature and the governor, matter of fact, every state legislature, every governor, they've chosen, because they take votes, to send an inadequate amount of funding to the state's largest school district. School communities, not just a school district, but school communities that educate more Black children, more unhoused children, more bilingual speaking children, more special education children than any other place in the state of Illinois. And we, voters and leaders, parents and concerned citizens, can continue to accept it and move on like it's okay. See, I'm not just implicating those we vote for, I'm implicating those who also vote.
That's right.
You see the relationship?
That's right.
And the collective responsibility we get to have? These are not math problems. These are choices between whether students get a math teacher or a chemistry teacher or nothing at all. Make no mistake, what's happening in CPS is connected to a larger national agenda to strip public education down to its bare bones. It is a repudiation of the public good and, quite frankly, a relitigation of the results of the Civil War. Organizer, you got to pick a side. So teacher, I'm telling you, giving you all the context. Now, organizer, I'm telling you that it's time for you to pick a side. Do we, here's your choice. Choice, I see one. Choice, do we ally ourselves with those attempting to finish the work of the Confederacy? Or do we join the coalition of the willing? Hear me when I'm telling you. Or do we join the coalition of the willing to complete the unfinished work of the Freedmen's Bureau?
I got it.
For those of you who don't know, the Freedmen's Bureau was the government agency that resourced Reconstruction. So they both served as a Department of Justice, a Department of Health, and a Department of Education, and many centers around Southern America post-Civil War. Trump has picked his side, and he spells it out in Project 2025. He is here to win the relitigation of the Civil War and finish the work of the Confederacy. But what are we leading? What is the resolution of the unfinished work of the Freedmen's Bureau? This is a blue state, right? How many Underground Railroad sites have you taken kids to on a field trip?
My God.
This is a blue county, isn't it? A blue city. With blue executive and legislative leadership. Which side are we on? One of Trump's first acts was the termination of National Parks employees. I think Friends of the Park would agree with me that there are few other centers in public life that is the clear symbol of common good and community. Parks serve as a space, no matter what economic space you come from, what racial space you come from, what neighborhood you're driving in from, that park is an equalizer because you get to enjoy it in the same way. It's a gathering place set aside for our enjoyment. Think about it. There's no product. There's no vending. There's no commerce. I ain't talking about downtown. And that is an anathema. But that is an anathema to Donald Trump's worldview. So Donald Trump, and his application of Project 2025 is getting a 3-for-1 with this move alone. He gets to fire workers, weaken their union, and create more division by getting rid of workers who maintain the park where we get to actually see each other outside of our divisions. Donald Trump is dismantling the idea of the common good and community. One of the first social studies lessons taught in kindergarten classrooms is of community. Students leave the lesson identifying the common good through institutions like libraries, schools, and parks. They come to understand the connectedness of people and institutions and how they help us form community. The attack on the idea of community is exactly the point. Take, for instance, all of the right-wing outrage over my sister, bilingual music teacher, and unionist Kat Zamarin, one of the speakers at our November rally. She quotes brilliantly and perfectly American philosopher James Baldwin. Baldwin says, "The children are always ours."
Always. Always.
Every single one of them, all over the globe. And what comes next is, "CT, you think your children are its children?" Yes, we do. We do. We do. CTU thinks all children belong to it, and there's socialist conspiracy ideology. Well, I don't know about all that, but we like children. We educate them, we nurture them, we protect them, we support them, we negotiate for them, we create space for them. We even have them in our homes. But for real, you guys, in community, we belong to each other. That's the whole point of community.
Keep it real.
We have to love each other in community. We have to see each other in community.
Right.
What is it, our stakes today? They're stark, you all. Chaos or community? I think I heard someone say that already. We didn't hear it the first time he said it. Chaos or community? Thuggery or democracy? Rugged individualism, Ronald Reagan style? Or community empowerment, Ella Baker style? What we achieve through struggle. What history teaches us is that all America's documents, from the Magna Carta to the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution to the Emancipation Proclamation, are words on paper until they are tested through struggle. And what struggle teaches us is that what we have in place, all men are created equal, right? That's in a few documents, right? Men. Is incomplete until tested. It's incomplete until enslaved Africans organize a general strike. It's until the recognition of the Emancipation Proclamation twice, once for the political moment and later for the actual enforcement of it. Shout out to Juneteenth. Look at what Trump is attacking, and you will see the product of the struggle of our formerly enslaved Africans. Public schools. They were built and enshrined in the South during Reconstruction. Now, look at the dismantling of the Department of Education. Public health, built and enshrined in the South during Reconstruction. See the dismantling of Medicaid. Labor rights. Built and enshrined in the South during Reconstruction. See the mass termination of federal workers who are both female and black by and large. When black people assert freedom, liberty, it immediately exposes the inadequacy of our founding documents. So that's why we are blessed enough to have, especially in this moment, the 13th Amendment prohibits slavery. 14th Amendment, it establishes birthright citizenship, due process, equal protection, especially that amendment, right? The 15th Amendment, reaffirming the black man's right to vote. That man stuff. It was our ancestors who did that. It was their fever dream. I'm sorry, freedom dream. During the second Reconstruction civil rights movement, it was our grandparents and parents who had to fight for it again because of the backlash of actual Reconstruction that created the Jim Crow Black Code laws. So anytime you push forward, young people, anytime you push forward with ideas of self-determination, remember, I can do it myself. Sovereignty, equality, and equity, backlash is surely to come. And that's okay, because every time it came in this country, this room became a bit more diverse. It became a bit more complex. It became a bit more stronger. It became America. And the impact of those documents and people's struggle to illustrate it, not just to memorialize it. So from the cartoons of Thomas Nast to the films of D.W. Griffith, to the vigilante violence in both Springfield, Illinois, and Clarksdale, Mississippi, backlash painted my people as violent, inferior, undeserving of nice things like the Millennium Park or a movie downtown. You see why I said Jim Crow last week, you all? That's what it sounds like. That's what it reads like. And that is the effective impact of it. Which side are you on? 62 years after George Wallace stood in the schoolhouse door, we are having to argue that schools on the South and the West sides of Chicago should have the same programming in their schools as the North side. Heck, if you read Chalkbeat and ProPublica in the last week, we're still having to debate whether or not black people and black families and black neighborhoods deserve neighborhood schools at all. Many of you in this room, and thank God for it, were rightfully outraged when you saw dumpsters full of literary history written by luminaries like Nikki Giovanni, Octavia Butler, Toni Morrison, in Florida, right? Just piles of literature, like wonderful literature. So that's why I'm confused when people are frustrated and irritated with the Chicago Teachers Union when they insist on reconstructing school libraries in the schools in Chicago. We don't need dumpsters like they have in Florida if the library doesn't exist in Chicago. And it's not just Southside and Westside libraries either. Shout out to the Friends of Coonley that operates their library. Parents and their money. The difference between a cost and an investment are values. When I was here the last time, I told you to stop asking me the question of how will you pay for that? You remember? And there was a tabloid who said something like $50 billion. You cannot have fun in the city. Shout out to the young people. Because it is not about the cost of education that I hear when that question comes up. As a history teacher, I must tell you that that was the same question the planner class was asking out loud during Reconstruction when my people were trying to get their feet on the ground and be productive members of society. The planner class argued against the funding and the resourcing of public education, argued against public health, argued against the enfranchisement, argued against paying them a fair share. And I say this not just as a history teacher, but as a granddaughter of sharecroppers. I am one generation removed from this planner class nonsense. So as we think about history, count the years, people.
That's right.
Count the years.
Right.
Who wants to side with the planner class? No, like, really, let's take a moment about how the debate has devolved into the same lines that there were post-Civil War. How will you pay for that? Do they really need a liberal arts education? Pick a side. The difference between a cost and an investment is values. So follow me here. Let's have some fun. Interaction. Does anyone in here knows how much the bean costs? You know the bean downtown, Millennium Park, anyone? No? Who paid for it? Okay, some people know that, all right. Who's paying for the bunker-busting missiles hitting Iran right now? How much do they cost? How much does it cost for the National Guard to occupy the city of Los Angeles right now?
Right.
One more. How much does the recently ratified teachers' contract in Chicago cost? And who's paying for that? Nah, right? Every day in a newspaper. How much does it cost to lower class size? How much does it cost? How much does it cost to reconstruct 100 libraries and schools over the next 4 years? How much does it cost to give every school, listen to what I'm saying, every single day, a nurse, a social worker, and a counselor, how much is that going to cost? How much does it cost to cap class sizes in kindergarten at 23 in a classroom with a teacher and a teacher's assistant? How much does it cost? What's priceless? 12 organizers, parents, educators, grandmothers, a future mayor and a future alderwoman starving themselves to reverse the decision to close Diet High School. That's priceless. And then the teachers union, in coalition with the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, bargains with the Chicago Public Schools to make it a sustainable community school. And that school just won a boys' basketball, a state championship. It has an art department with artists in residence and applications from students from across the city seeking enrollment. What's invaluable? You know what's invaluable? The people at Hamline Elementary School who had sanctuary language in their contract, which mandated a training that enabled the security guards to ask the Department of Homeland Security for their warrant and then call the principal, and then the principal calls downtown, and then the counselors tell the teachers, and then the community groups begin to surround and the parents come to the school. See, what's invaluable is contract language that mandated that coalition. How much does a teacher's contract cost? And who pays for it? Chicago is the epicenter of the third reconstruction. Find your place in it. In the first reconstruction, there was a role for everyone to play. Even in the second, people like Harriet, Denmark, Frederick, David worked alongside people like John and Wendell, Angelina and Sarah. Shout out to history nerds. These people built the infrastructure for the Underground Railroad and the demand to create and fund the South's first public schools. The Niagara Convention begat the NAACP. There was SNCC, and it was the Friends of SNCC. There was an integrated Mississippi Freedom Summer. And you also get the very complicated and powerful relationship Dr. King had with both Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. Everyone then, just like right now, has an opportunity to be a part of the change this moment calls for. And if we're not careful, we will miss it under the lines of, do you hate charters or do you like charters? Under the lines of, we don't want people to have a raise, which means you don't want your schools to have a stable workforce that is anchored by veteran educators. I know it's hard to recognize when we're in historical moments, and I know this through some of the data from that time period. You know, we're a data-driven society, right? So let me give you some data. In 1966, Dr. King, this wonderful icon, this symbol of pride and peace and freedom, only was at a 33% favorability rating. He was underwater. So I'm reminded that we get to choose in this moment. We get to choose chaos. We get to choose schools being unstaffed in August because we make the debate about a math problem. We get to choose chaos if we continue to think about closing schools instead of resourcing schools. Or we get to choose principled struggle, where we call our city, our county, and our state to not just give press conferences about how terrible Donald Trump is, but that we get to pass legislation that funds the public schools he's trying to destroy. And finally, I want you to take some courage from some people in the room today. Dr. Clory Blake led our bargaining team in the creation of LGBTQIA plus safe schools. Dr. Blake, will you raise your hand? Dr. Blake saw the epidemic of queer youth suicide, the bullying of trans youth, and said, we're going to bargain this. And now our schools will be safer to affirm every student on their own journey of self-discovery. Thank you. Sebelia Pittman is one of the few black educators left in the system right now. Raise your hand, JSU alum. Ms. Pittman is a teacher at Nash Elementary School who taught newcomers from Venezuela. She did everything that she could to connect, even though she doesn't even speak Spanish. And so what she did with her time at the table was make sure that she negotiated that people like her can go and receive a bilingual certification free of charge. And then asked my vice president, Jackson Potter, who saw fit during the middle of contract negotiations to help lead an organizing effort to give us the greatest show of resistance by labor on May 1st than we've ever seen before. These are everyday people who are dreaming of a world where we create community, we secure our democracy, and we protect our children. We are doing it through a union of women who live in the neighborhoods in which they teach. We are doing it in the city in which they live. We are doing it together because that's what solidarity calls for. We are expanding sustainable community schools like DIET. We elected a mayor who is committed, come hell and high water, to love black children, to make sure our city is safe, and to make sure that our schools are fully funded and resourced, to end the sub-minimum wage, and to provide a raise to child care workers.
Yes.
He's doing that with an elected Board of Education. An elected Board of Education that also ratified a contract that got nearly 100% support from our members.
Right.
A contract that begins to reconstruct our schools in the green economy with children anchored at the center. These wins are for the entire city of Chicago. These wins are for people who believe that they have to bow to a dictator. These wins are for people who deserve more than what they've gotten before. These wins are to spur the third Reconstruction in a city that is yet not taking on the responsibility, but seems pretty ready in this moment to dismantle segregation and the underfunding of our public schools. I invite this room to resist this moment of division, to resist reading the headlines and not asking the question. We get to have a Chicago that has fully funded schools, beautiful parks, neighborhoods that are integrated, and people who care about each other. We get to have community. Thank you, Chicago.
Thank you, Stacey Davis Gates. Thank you for that. I came into this today with about 50 questions. And we were going to sit down and have, I'm leaving now with about 150 questions, but I will ask you one, and I think it's going to be simple. Will you commit to coming back and having a chat, whether it be here or maybe we do a podcast or something, to really get into this deeper? And as you said, no apologies, no holds barred. We love to have these conversations. We love to elevate the conversation as you helped do today. And as City Club, we're so committed to doing that on a non-biased, non-partisan manner. So my question to you is, will you come back?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And we hope all of you will join us. We have a busy couple of weeks. We have Commissioner Sierra Boatwright from the Department of Planning and Development coming on Wednesday. That's heavily sold out. So you got to up your membership to get off that wait list. Mariana Spiropoulos, the clerk of the circuit court, is on June 26th, revitalizing historically disinvested communities with BMO. BMO CEO and United Way is on July 9th. And then the Brookfield Zoo, a new era at the zoo, on the 23rd, and the Shedd Aquarium in August. We're touching all sorts of topics here at City Club, and we've got so much more to come. Thank you. Sorry we're here a little extra, a few extra minutes today. It was incredible to hear from Stacey Davis Gates, and we hope you all will be back soon. Thanks again.